What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. Joined, as always, by my main man, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
And it's another beautiful day in the neighborhood. Got my house shoes on.
There it is.
Just looking forward to some good conversation. Missed everybody from the off week last week. So I'm raring to get back into it, man.
Right. It was nice to have, but also kind of like felt out of the norm in a sense. So definitely glad to be back. Got a handful of interesting things to talk about today. So I guess might as well just go ahead and get on into it. So we are a week or so removed from the draft now. The full 53 man roster is starting to come into view. May not have the full 53 guys that are going to be on roster on staff yet, but you're getting real close. Rookie minicamp starts this week, starts on Friday. Be the first time we get to see our, draft selections, really in building and doing football like things. Obviously with it being just a 3-day mini camp, there's not going to be no hidden or nothing like that, of course, but still it kind of gives you the first signal of, hey, okay, we're moving into the next phase of the offseason. Now I think, Bijan Robinson is going to be at the rookie symposium thing. I think I saw that, but I'm not sure if that happens the same weekend as our camp starts. I really hope it doesn't, because I want to see Bijan Robinson in the building.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to see him in the building. So hopefully that's the case. But if he goes to the rookie symposium, But I would love to see – we're not going to get – it's not going to be like a normal practice and training camp or anything like that. Right. But you're going to see some reports from media – you're going to see some stuff like that. I would absolutely look forward to it with, hearing about Bijan, hearing about Bergeron, hearing about Harrison, Clark, Clark Phillips, just hearing about all those guys. I want to really see, I just wanted to hear about more of them there on the field.
Exactly. Willie asked, what's the rookie symposium? I don't know if it's actually called symposium, but it's where they get a lot of the high-profile rookies from the draft class together, and for them, it's like a rookie U kind of deal. Kind of gives them the first exposure to some of the things that they're going to be exposed to in the NFL. I think in years past we had Desmond Trufant went, and I'm trying to think of, I think Vic Beasley went as well. So, we've had a handful of players go there. Jonathan, you froze over there? Oh, we might have lost Jonathan for a minute. We'll see what happens. I'm going to remove him for the time being until I see him come back. So, I guess let's move into some of the more interesting things. As a lot of y'all already know, that we signed Trey Flowers, cornerback formerly of the Cincinnati Bengals. And I think he was a Seahawks draft pick. He spent time as a safety in college, then transitioned to a corner because the Seahawks like their big long corners. I think he's 6'2", a little over 200 pounds. Got to the Bengals, transitioned back to the safety, and played on special teams. So we signed him to a one-year deal, which adds yet again to the secondary, which is starting to get crowded, to be completely honest. Now you got, obviously, A.J. Terrell, Jeff Okuda, Mike Hughes, D. Alford, Darren Hall, and now you're adding in Cornell Armstrong, obviously, and Trey Flowers. So that's starting to become a very crowded room. MJ says Bengals played Trey Flowers primarily on tight ends. He played very well in the role. I'm assuming Falcons will use him in the same role. The size and speed match up very well against tight ends. Yeah, he was used as like a tight end eraser, and could very well be used in that same type role here in Atlanta, or possibly used as, I think there's going to be a big open competition for the nickel role. Honestly, if I were to have to like think about it right now here on the, what do we got? The 9th of May. I think your other outside corner is Jeff Okuda. At least I think that's what they're banking on. And then you're going to have a fight for the nickel spot. You know, I think it's going to be a very like open-ended competition for the nickel spot. And I'll be interested to see how that comes out. Dre Harrison says, didn't we trade Jalen Hawkins? No, we haven't traded Jalen Hawkins yet, but you know, that may happen depending on what transpires through the through camp. Chris says, say goodbye to Darren Hall. Somebody's gonna lose their spot, right? Like, you're not gonna carry that many defensive backs on the roster. So is it Darren Hall? Is it Cornell Armstrong? Is it D. Alford? You know, it's interesting to see. What I feel like they have done is raise the floor. Like, to be completely honest, I feel like the floor has, you know, gone up. But you got to think about it. The last 2 years, we've dealt with injuries in the secondary, whether it be to Casey Hayward. The year before, it was Isaiah Oliver. So we've dealt with secondary issues throughout the, you know, last couple of years, and it feels like they don't want to deal with that again. It feels like that, you know, if they deal with it, they don't want to have a TJ Green out there covering, I think it was it Jamar Chase or something? I can't remember who, that game where they had TJ Green out there trying to cover. But it wasn't pretty. You know, that much is for sure. So let's see. If Jonathan can't come back, I'm going to be relying on the chat. So I hope y'all got some questions tonight. King 7 says, I'm concerned about our wide receiver position the most. And if Drake gets injured, which I really hope he doesn't, it's going to get ugly and predictable on the offense. And that's where Terry will be under fire. Yeah, I mean, you can't fix it all. In one offseason, I felt like they maybe did a pretty good job of, you know, making better strides on guys that will compete better as far as like Mac Hollins and, you know, maybe a better version with Scotty Miller versus Demaryius Byrd. Maybe there was a disconnect there. But either way, I think that is like right now, that is probably like my biggest concern is wide receiver 2. And I use that loosely where I think it really will be like the pass catcher 2 or 3 or pass catcher 3 or 4. I think we're going to be running a lot of 12 personnel this year. And that's going to be obviously Janu Smith and Kyle Pitts, Drake London and Bijan Robinson. But Trey Flowers is an interesting addition. They keep like churning this the defense which is good to see, because, you know, according to a lot of people, we didn't spend a ton of draft capital on the defense. So hey, I think Jonathan might be back. Are you back,
man? Wow. Hopefully I'm back for good, but yeah, everything just
everything just locked up on you.
It just went. Internet was gone. I was like, what is going on? And so I was about to connect on my phone, but that was giving me issues. And then all of a sudden everything came back up. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, hopefully it'll stick with us this time, because me sitting here talking to myself for an hour was not going to be pleasant for anybody. I went ahead and jumped into the Trey Flowers deal as that being like the most relevant news that we've had. Did you have any thoughts on the like Trey Flowers deal?
I mean, just it's more competition into like an already crowded room, it seems like. You know, if the guy can, you know, be like, you know, a potential nickel guy, I mean, he's got, like, he doesn't necessarily scream nickel to me, at least not nickel in the sense of he's the nickel slot guy.
Right.
At 6'3", 200 pounds, he seems like more of a, you know, a guy you would probably want on the outside just because of the length.
Yeah, that's what Seattle tried to do with him. They tried to convert him from safety to corner because of that length, and it didn't necessarily work out for them. He did find a little bit of success in the with the Bengals as like a, you know, a tight end eraser, which you know, could lead to like a bigger nickel type situation.
Yeah, so yeah, I would see him more as like that box safety, tight end coverage guy.
Right. We got a question from Willie Doc. If you want to throw that up while I try to pull it up. Let's see.
There it is. And.
Okay, 2020. There it is.
Willie Doc with the $5. since they say you have to judge draft class 3 years in, can you rate the 2020 draft?
All right. So the 2020 draft, I had to get like refreshed of who all that was. So that was A.J. Terrell in the first round, Marlon Davidson in the second round, Hennessy in the third round, Michael Walker in the fourth, Hawkins in the fourth, and then Sterling Hofstetter in the seventh, the punter. So
He's not on the he's no longer on. Marlon Davidson's no longer on the team. Jalen Hawkins and Michael Walker, we'll see if maybe they can kind of get a new lease on life this year.
Yeah, those two guys, I had high hopes for both Michael Walker and Jalen Hawkins, to be honest. And they've both had like up and down like careers so far. Like you've seen some flashes of Michael Walker being decent. He started out last year as the Mike linebacker. By the end of the season, lost his job. We'll see if he can rebound. I kind of compared him to a poor man's like Isaiah Simmons in the fact that he was a very versatile player. So far, sometimes versatile players don't necessarily get their skill set harnessed,
and they're kind of a jack of all trades, master of none situation.
Right, right. And Jalen Hawkins just never really did seem to really get stability under him. But with both of them being fourth round picks, you're looking at guys who are that's teetering on like what I would call rotational players. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, they both fill the role as a rotational player. I just don't know.
Maybe that's what they need to be, like Michael Walker as like the guy. Mm-hmm. Now, doesn't mean you can't find the guy in the fourth round. Or
no, you
round
definitely can. Whatever.
But as a fourth round guy, if he turns out to not be the guy at middle linebacker, but he is a good special teams guy, and if he's a guy that you can bring in and not completely fall off a cliff kind of guy,
right,
then I think that'll be a decent return on investment. Now, I'll say A.J. Terrell, A+, knocked it out of the park on that
one. Which is hilarious because in like what I pulled up just so I could see the picks was CBS Sports, and they gave that grade a C+ for A.J. Terrell and a B- for Marlon Davidson. Now, I know that Marlon, as Dre says, just signed a one-year deal with the 49ers, but if I ain't mistaken, he was out of the league last year. Like, I don't think he played for anybody last year, did he? After we cut him? Now,
I don't think he did.
Marlon Davidson's been oft injured. and never really did seem to make the transition to defensive tackle.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately for him, I think he got drafted because of what he was able to do in a two-point stance with Derrick Brown in the middle of that Auburn defense. And yeah. I was high on him, but my biggest question was, is he going to be able to make a transition to a three-tech? Now, this was under Dan Quinn, who that regime absolutely loved getting people and shifting them to a different position.
They seem to be doing the same deal with Micah Parsons now. He's bulking up, and he's going to be a straight-up defensive end now. When to this point in his career, he's been the guy that you kind of plug in and let
move
him
all over the place and
rush from everywhere. Yep. And he's created a huge – now, this might try to be an absolutely stellar move, but I also remember – Vic Beasley coming off of a 16-sack season, he's like, oh, we're going to turn him into a linebacker.
Yep. Like, what are we doing here?
Now, I'm not saying that if he'd have left Beasley alone, if he'd have left him out at the end, that he would have been just fine. The guy obviously had some issues, but moving him to a different position and having him learn new skill sets he led the league in sacks just kind of seems
– That seemed to be like Dan Quinn's, like – favorite pastime. But like Hennessy so far has not been an abject failure. He's been a decent, rotational guy. When you get that guy in the third round, now you're starting to get into that territory in my mind. Mm-hmm. Like you hope he turns into a starter, but if nothing else, it's at least a, you know, solid backup. Or a solid rotational guy, and maybe that's what he ends up being.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, a lot of people were thinking, like, when he showed up at left guard, not center, but left guard, when he showed up at left guard last year with the rest of the offensive line working the way it did, Hennessy looked fine.
Yeah, he looked okay. Like
he wasn't a turnstile. I saw something today or yesterday. That apparently, like, as much as we bemoaned the pass blocking of the Falcons, that it wasn't, you know, we weren't there with it. Apparently, we were, like, top 10. I didn't realize that.
I think we were, like, overall a top 10, like, offensive line unit, I think. But I'd have to look it up. I haven't dived into that part yet. But they still, like, gave up a fair amount of sacks.
I would say Willie Doc, I'm closer to you here. Maybe the Hennessy is maybe a C+ grade, but I could see where like Walker, especially Walker and Hawkins, again, where you're drafting them, if they don't turn into like solid starters, but they're rotational guys or backup guys that can give you some play if you know, if necessary. I think those are decent picks at those. But yeah, Hoffrister is an F because
he didn't even make the roster. But you're drafting a punter in the seventh, and if I am mistaken, he was punting in the XFL. If that counts for anything, and you could say, oh, what does that matter? Well, for a while, Koo was kicking in the AAF, so. Or the AFF or whatever that one, whichever one that one was. AF, I can't even remember now.
If he can just keep kicking and eventually get himself to a point where somebody looks at him, he can maybe get back into the league at some point.
Exactly.
Everybody's always on the lookout for a new punter somewhere.
That's right. Nick says, bring back Sanu. I'm good. I really like Sanu while he was here. Like Sanu was like, I was sad to see them trade him away, but I think his time has come and gone.
We fleeced. It was New England, wasn't it? We fleeced the hell out of New England on that. Oh, yeah. Had a second round draft pick for him.
Yep. I like Sanu. I like what he did for us, but right now I'm more interested in seeing what like this iteration of the Falcons is going to be and letting Arthur Smith and Terry work. So with that being said, I want y'all to take a, I'm going to play this clip. I want y'all to take a listen to it. And we're going to talk about it afterwards. This was Terry Fontenot, a clip from his interview with the Rich Eisen show. So I want y'all to take a listen to this for just a second, and then we're going to talk about it. It's about a minute long. Oh, well, crap. Let's hit the right button. Bam.
And about your draft, I love Bijan Robinson. I thought you should take him. I'm glad that you did. Walk me through your process on taking a running back in this day and age in the top 10 of an NFL draft. Terry Fondo,
yep,
please.
Yep. And really the way we look at it, Rich, is when you're we can have these rules, or people can have these rules, that you don't take a running back at a certain point or a guard at a certain point. You have to take a premium position. But what we say is, tell me the player, and who's the particular running back that's sitting there. And when it's a guy like Bijan Robinson, who we don't even put in a running back box when we talk about positionless football, and he's an impact offensive player. And wherever he is, wherever you get him the ball, he's a playmaker, he's a touchdown maker, he's a home run hitter, and he's got the makeup. He's a better person than he is a player, so we know he's going to reach his ceiling. So we believe he is one of the better players in the draft, one of the better people in the draft. So we're really excited to pull that card off the board.
Now there's, like, I don't want to play that at like a ton because I don't want to like get nabbed or whatever, but there's a couple interesting quotes there that Terry Fontenot said that I want to touch on for just a minute. The first one being that the way they say they viewed, you know, Bijan Robinson. They viewed him as, you know, not just a running back, which we've heard. But now, like, I picked this out because this is straight up and down from the horse's mouth, so to speak, right? This is from the man making the decision. Talking about an offensive weapon, talking about him being a home run hitter, when people act like we didn't get more explosive in the offseason. Like, you can just easily point at our first overall pick as being a move that makes us more explosive.
Yep.
So, like, what was your talking, or like thoughts when hearing, you know, what Fontenot had to say there?
I mean, the first thing that pops to my mind is Terry Fontenot and this front office are not going to limit themselves based on other people's criteria.
Right.
Right. Yes. Has the running back position been devalued? Has it been the trend recently that, you know, you're not going to, very rarely do you ever see a guy being the bell cow, you know, outside of Henry and a couple other guys, everything else is running back by committee, you know, and Henry, even today, you know, he's going to get his carries, but there's the other backs in that system. They still get their carries. So it's not just Henry. It's not the days of Emmett Smith and the Cowboys where, you know, from snap one through all the way through the game that you're basically running Emmett and you're just having guys come in to spell him so he can take a play or two off to get a breather. Like, it's not that. It's, you know, But at the same time, you're looking at this running back, and he's not just a running back. He's a guy that, you know, offers you the versatility. And, you know, I know we talked earlier about being a master, you know, a jack of all trades, master of none. But this guy excels at all the stuff that he does.
Right. He does all the stuff, and he does it well.
Yeah, he does all the stuff, and he does it better than well.
Yeah.
Yes. And – you know, but I think the important thing was, if you were going to put the money in on that kind of guy, put that draft capital into that kind of guy, he has to, like, they have to mesh personality wise. They have to like who he is as a person.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest differentiator for the Falcons. You know, other teams have different filters,
different standards,
or whatever. But for the Falcons, it's like, we want this guy to be a guy who, you know, Doesn't mean he can't have hobbies doing other things, but he loves the game of football. But they have good personalities. They're leaders. They're not guys that you necessarily have to like push to, you know, well, maybe, you know, you don't want the guy that you have to bring into the league and be like, well, you know, we got these guys who can show him how to be a pro, that could show him how to be this and that and the other. If you're going to do, if you're going to spend draft capital on a guy like that, it's not top 10. Maybe a late first round, but like second, third, fourth, fifth round. If you want to take a guy that's maybe got some really good upside talent wise, but maybe the personality, he needs to mature a little, you know, all those things, you kind of have to babysit him a little bit. That you take him farther back in the draft. The top 10 pick guys, in my opinion, need to, regardless of how they pan out as a pro, you know, talent wise, they, you know, they at least have to have the tangible intangibles there. And then they have to have they have to be like the kind of person that is like a Bijan, or, you know, or some of the other guys that go in the top 10 that are just have really good personalities that are really driven. Those are the guys you're going to spend that money on. And that doesn't care whether they're a running back, a left guard,
right,
a center, you know, safety, linebacker, whatever. You know, Luke Kuechly, you know, that guy, you know, in today's NFL, linebackers don't go super duper high. Luke Kuechly would probably, you know, coming out today, he'd be a top 10 pick for the same exact reasons.
Right.
Because he not only is a great player, but he's got a great person, and he also is likely going to elevate everybody around
him. And that's the thing, is like the next 2 points that I want to highlight in that little video clip was the two different ways that Terry Fontenot said that Bijan was one of their best players and was a better person.
Yeah.
You know, talking about like the character makeup, you know, has them feeling like he's going to reach his potential. And you're already seeing videos on Twitter of, you know, Bijan working out with guys like, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, and, mm-hmm, you know, working on his route running. And this is before we even get to rookie minicamp. Like, what they're looking for, whether the, you know, folks in, you know, chat want to admit it or think about it or what have you, they're looking for a new face of the franchise. And part of them thinks that Bijan could be that guy. Part of them, in my opinion, thinks that Bijan could easily be, you know, the face of the Falcons going forward, especially if a Desmond Ridder like doesn't necessarily pan out. You know, if you come through the end of the city, like, or end of this season, you know, you could easily be having like Bijan on all the billboards around Atlanta. Like, it wouldn't surprise me one bit. You know, King had an interesting point. He says it's basically the Saints set up with Kamara and Ingram. Rob, but see, here's the deal. Where you're comparing Bijan to Kamara, Bijan can also be Ingram. That's the part that, yes, he can do the things that Kamara gave you in the little dump-offs, as you're alluding to here, be the dump-off guys you can count on run, you know, after the catch and make guys miss and getting those good first downs and hopefully big plays. He can do that while also, you know, big time runs, running with power, running with agility. And those are the things that like have me excited as we're moving towards rookie minicamp.
And as a running back, probably one of the most important things to being a pro in the NFL is being able to protect your quarterback. And this guy excelled at that.
Yep.
You know, so like
he excels in all the phases.
At this point, I'm not saying we don't know what he's going to be, but at this point, I don't really see a weakness. I guess maybe the only weakness I've heard people say is, you know, when it comes to the pros, he may need to be a little bit more decisive in like stop, you know, not trying to make a, you know, hit that home run every single time. And just take what's there. You know, I've heard some, you know, talk about that where he he's always looking for that next cut to try to keep going, break it big, which, you know, we'll see how it works out in the NFL. I'm sure he'll learn real quick. Like, you know, when you're in college, you can do that because the game doesn't go quite as fast.
Right.
When you're in the pros, things happen so much quicker that, you know, sometimes you don't, you just don't have, even no matter how quick you are, sometimes there's nothing you can do. And right. you just take what you can get and move on to the next play. And, you know, that's going to be probably something that he needs to learn. If he doesn't already know it, you know, maybe he does.
Well, it's not a
big deal, but.
Now, Tony says, I wish people would stop saying, if Desmond Ridder works out, what if Desmond doesn't work out? Unfortunately, right now, I'm going to have to until we get at least a full season on. Mm-hmm. Like, or at least, you know, halfway through the season or what have you. I need to see. I would be saying this. I may not be saying this had he had a full year. But unfortunately for Ridder, he was only given 4 games. Now, I think it's absolute bullcrap that in a lot of these QB rankings, there's people that have Sam Howell ranked over him. And I'm like, what? And Jordan Love ranked over him. I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, as far as like, you've seen 4 games out of Ridder and you saw him get better each week. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you could take a 1 game Sam Howell and say that he had a better performance than Ritter's 4 games. Like, that don't make much sense to me. Same deal with, you know, Jordan Love. I think you've seen him for a half a football game, maybe. One or 2 starts at most.
Yeah, yeah. I think he probably started a little bit this last year with Rodgers maybe not, you know, not being in for a couple of games. But.
Right, and if I correct me if I'm wrong, but he wasn't necessarily like blowing the world away when he did start. So I'm with you in a sense, Tony. Like, I get it. I get the sentiment. I am going to have to see a little bit more, but I do think it is ridiculous that there's publications that have other QBs ranked higher for no reason.
I mean, and Sam Howell wasn't – it's not like Sam Howell was a first or second round draft pick. This guy was a fifth round draft pick.
Right.
You know, but to Tony's thing, it's like, you know, why do we keep saying if he does work out, what about if he doesn't? Right now, like, we all know what happens if he doesn't.
Yeah.
We all know. If he doesn't work out, whether it's this coming draft or this next draft or the draft after that, there's always going to be a quarterback. And whether or not you think you're at the end of the rope with Ridder is entirely up to the coaching staff. If it's after this next season and they make a play for, you know, Caleb Williams or Drake May or somebody like that, great. Then by all means. But, you know, so we all know what that's going to be. If he does work out, that's much more exciting because then you don't have to worry about it.
Like, I want him to work out so bad just so that I can, like, on Twitter go nanny nanny boo boo. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want that to transpire. But I'm hoping Jonathan didn't freeze. Jonathan, are you there? I might have lost Jonathan again. He seems to be having a rough technical night. We'll see. I'll remove him for the time being and see if he comes back. Let's see. Here we go. Nighthawk has a good point here. He says, I remember people said Jalen Hurts would not work out and then they needed to draft a top QB. You're right. And they just signed him to a really big contract. So this is one of those situations where I truly hope that I'm wrong. I truly hope that, one second, Jonathan's down again. Tell him to try to phone this time. Anyway, so I truly hope that it is a situation where next year, this time next year, we're not even talking about Caleb Williams or Drake May. I really hope so, because that would be much, much better, much more preferable. Bubba Gump has a good point. He said, there's no guarantee any of the QBs who were just drafted even play their rookie contracts before being out of the league. Exactly. Even the ones that were drafted that we wanted. there's still a debate whether Justin Fields is going to pan out or not. So, no, there's no guarantee. So that's why I have to put that caveat. You know, that's why I put that caveat up there. All right. Moving on to the next topic. We're in the part of the offseason that is like clickbait and trade rumor roundup. It seems like every day, we're about to get into that, Dre. It seems like every day there is some rumor floating around somewhere about whatever. So this is the one that caught my eye earlier this morning. It's only a rumor, but the Cleveland Browns want to trade for CP84. Would you pull the trigger? Me personally, I wouldn't, because it takes away from our dynamic playmakers weakening our team. Now, I will say that Jonathan's trying to come back. He's trying to make a valiant effort. Anyway, we're going to maybe. Jonathan, this is going to make for a bad audio recording. I just want you to know that. So, I saw this on Monday come across my deal yesterday. It says, NFL trade market, Falcons aging star could be a perfect fit for the Browns. Now, this is from the Browns version of the Falcoholic. Okay? So, you know, take that for a grain of salt. They're just throwing things out there that might stick, that look like that could be interesting, not clickbait. Well, we call it clickbait, but interesting, just off-season topics. So the question then comes with, can you hear us, Jonathan? He still can't hear me. Can you hear me? All right. Well, eventually he'll maybe get there. So, anyway, they were proposing that the Browns trade for aging star Cordarrelle Patterson. And there's a part of me that thinks like it makes sense depending on what the compensation is the fact that you do now have, you know, Bijan Robinson, who gives you a lot of the same things that Cordell does. And it's just going to depend on like how creative and how interesting the Falcon staff wants to use all of their pieces. You heard in that clip earlier that Terry Fontenot was talking about positionless football. Well, Cordarrelle Patterson, believe it or not, is kind of what started that deal. It was Atlanta that was using Cordarrelle Patterson in a way, and then all of a sudden, like, Deebo Samuel took over the headlines because San Francisco was a much better team. Y'all correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I really felt like we were using Cordell like that before San Francisco started using Deebo. Well, now you have a young, very young version who can give you a lot of the same things that Cordell did. Now, Cordell was a wide receiver turned running back, as we, as we talked about earlier, Bijan is a running back who can give you some of the wide receiver stuff. So that was one like interesting tidbit. And like I said, it would have to come down to how they feel like they're going to distribute the ball with Kyle Pitts back in the fold. Drake London coming into his second year. Like, you brought in Janu Smith. Millie, Kareem Hunt, if I'm not mistaken, is a free agent. So, no, he's not necessarily still there. So, I hear birds chirping. Can you hear me this time?
I can hear you. I couldn't hear you last time I tried to click in. It was just everything was loading.
Ah, gotcha.
We'll see how long this lasts. I'm having a bad internet day today, apparently.
Who you got for internet over there? We need to get them on the phone. They are messing up.
Comcast, man. I did check my Comcast app, and it was showing as like they're aware of an issue in the area. So we'll see.
Well, can't always do that. Now we kind of got into the clickbait trade rumor segment where we were talking about the first one up so far was the CP84 to the Browns potential.
Yeah.
Now Chris is not that one. Chris is saying, can't give up a fresh CP84 in the fourth quarter. Like, I don't think you give up Cordell Patterson, and I don't think you give him up because it's, you know, it's another weapon. Like, you don't have a true wide receiver too. So I don't know if you necessarily give up on that. The idea of having that guy that you could split out to take up the wide receiver two carries.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to give up Cordarrelle Patterson right now. But if somebody comes and is like, "Hey, we'll give you a second round for him," I might say yes. They'll listen. They'll
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to. The age and, you know, durability concerns, I think, is going to be what will hold back any kind of a deal like that specifically. But, like, I'm sure they'll listen to him. I personally wouldn't get rid of him. I would, or send him packing somewhere else. I think he's too much of a good personality to have in the locker room, for one. Guy, you know, by all appearances, the guy seems to love being here. He cheerleads for the team, for us to go out and get guys. He just seems like that kind of a guy that you want to have around your locker room. And you know, maybe that's more than a potential future draft pick that might or might not be a bust.
I agree in the idea that I think he's more beneficial on the team, even if he's splitting, you know, carries and reps and everything else. I think he's a locker room guy who is far more beneficial. And you're also talking about, like, CP has kick return and punt return ability. That makes him more valuable. I don't know about more valuable than Bijan, but he brings another added value to the team in that aspect. So,
yeah,
I think, you know, I don't think that they get rid of him for peanuts. Somebody would have to be bringing a good offer, because you're only saving $4 million against the cap. And as of right now, yeah, after we sign our draft class, we're still like $10 million plus or $9 million plus. So it's not like
I haven't seen anything about the numbers for the Trey Flowers deal, so I don't know what that's looking like.
It can't be that big. I doubt it. With it being a 1-year deal, I highly doubt it. It's that big. Now, the other one that came up shortly after the draft was this deal. Yeah, yeah. Well, this is why it's in the clickbait trade rumor segment.
It is.
Somebody named Connor Power says the Falcons reportedly had deals in place for Kyler Murray and Ryan Tannehill before the draft, but the two sides couldn't work out the money, per Simon Hunter NFL on the Favorites podcast. I don't believe that for one daggum second.
I will say this. If he had just kept it to Tannehill,
maybe
I could maybe see it. The money is still not right in that situation, but there is no, unless they did something super crazy, there is no way in hell Arizona, not that they wouldn't potentially want to, but financially, it would absolutely ruin them.
Right, and not just that, like, there's a deal, like, with the way that contract structured is, like, they could, like, potentially get out of it without, like, much repercussion after the end of next season.
Yeah, so, but not for this season. Like, because if they trade him this season, like, I think the number I read was something like 90-something million dollars comes due, like, immediately.
That's the thing. That's what makes this, like, fully in the clickbait, like, BS area. But I figured it would be, you know, good to talk about, because, like, you start see, like, silly things like this pop up, and all this does for a casual fan is reinforce the idea that maybe they aren't sold on Ritter. And I think that they are sold on Ridder until they are see that they aren't. Does that make sense? Like, until he proves otherwise, they have, like, Ridder is their guy.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with, you know, Bubba, you know, he says this is fake AF. Yes, exactly. Because think about everything that you've heard, like, Terry talk about, like, character-wise, as we were talking about before in the last segment. Same thing with Arthur Smith, talking about, like, the character that they want. And Murray has a reputation of being lazy, of being, like, only focused on Kyler Murray. And the more extended version of that clip that we played earlier talks about, you know, Terry talks about wanting guys that are unselfish and wanting to win and wanting the team to win and not concerned about, like, personal stats and carries and stuff. He was talking about Bijan. But when you hear him talk about a player like that, it's hard for then to turn around and apply that to Kyler Murray and everything that we have heard about Murray, to the fact that whether it was BS or not, they put a clause in there about playing video games. Like, there are Reddit pages out there that are correlations of Kyler Murray's stats and double XP weekend on Call of Duty. So that's, you know, crazy.
Yeah.
So anyway, that one, yeah, no, like full cap.
I am sure that Kyler is a good dude. Okay. I could be wrong. He might not be a good dude, but, like, he seems like he's a good guy. Right. But when it comes to football, it just seems like he's more into what can I do for me. And, you know, you know, they can say whatever they want after the fact, but they literally had it built into his last this latest contract, or the, you know, about, you know, like, having him, like, stipulations on watching film. And then they had it removed only after the backlash. But the fact that you even had to have that there to begin there, you know,
it tells, like, you everything you need to know.
That is not a self, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm the most self-motivated person in the world. I am not. My wife can attest to that. But
hey, you're standing on your porch right now trying to finish this show out. So,
gotta do what you gotta do sometimes. But at the same time, like, you know, as an NFL franchise, especially for a franchise quarterback, a guy that you're going to pay, you know, multi-generational wealth to, like, this is the kind of guy that you want to make sure, if you're going to send a guy, give a guy that much money, he better be self-motivated. He better be the guy that is the example of how to be a pro. You don't give money to a guy, or you shouldn't be giving money to a guy who's like, yeah, I could be studying film right now, but, man, there's that double XP weekend on Warzone this weekend, and I'm just
double XP.
So, like, again, Kyler, based on everything we know, both from a Kyler perspective and from a Falcons culture perspective, exact polar opposites. So he doesn't fit that way. And on top of that, either Arizona was going to eat all $90+ million, or there was going to have to be some trade part, you know, some part of the trade where we were going to have to take on a sizable chunk of that $90 million for a guy that wants to play Call of Duty instead of playing, you know, being franchise quarterback. So
that's right.
But now the Tannehill part, that had all the earmarks. Like, if it had just been that, if it had just been Tannehill, there was a trade in place, I could even understand that. But again, it just doesn't make sense based on what we've heard from the front office. Like, literally before all this came out, where, like, they had came out and said that he was a starter. They told Heineke that he was a starter. They showed Calais Campbell, sat and watched film and told him of the vision. And that's what got Calais into Atlanta. You know, to go through all of this and to be BSing everybody to the point where you're like, we think this guy is the future. Oh, but Tannehill, what? All right, come on in. You know, he's the guy now. you go be backup, even though we told everybody you were going to be the – it just didn't make any sense at all.
Now, another one, I didn't pull the clip on it or whatever, but another one was like kind of dusted up a little bit yesterday was clickbait of like Yannick Ngakoue. The team had been linked to Yannick Ngakoue. Well, that link was just, again, another article, another like website. I think this was Bleacher Report that was like putting together like, oh, the best landing spot for the remaining free agents. And which is, it's a fine article to have, but there was no like significant connection for Yannick to Atlanta. And now it may happen before, you know, training camp goes, but I, as of right now, there is no like solid connection to for Yannick in Atlanta. So, and I feel like now granted, like obviously Yannick has the steady production, but the idea that he's a not carbon copy, but he's the same style of rusher that Arnold Ebiketie is, that, you know, 250, 260 ish, you know, type deal. Like he's that kind of a rusher. You already have a handful of those, D'Angelo Malone, Lorenzo Carter. Obviously, Yannick is more consistent than those guys, but I would imagine that you're trying to give those, like, especially Malone and Ebiketie a chance to, you know, take a step forward.
So, but also if you're in a if you're looking at this upcoming season with the moves you've made and you feel like, man, we could really, you know, push for division title. We could, you know, at the very minimum playoff push. You know, try to get, you know, try to do as much as we possibly can on that end of it. You know, so somewhat in a win now, not necessarily win Super Bowl now, but be a winning team now, and be in that conversation. Then bringing in a guy like Yannick, who has been super productive, while Ebiketie and Malone have the promise, the production hasn't been there yet, so you can't count on that. You bring in a guy like Ngakoue, he's a guy that the likelihood is that you can count on, you know, 8 to 9 sacks would be my guess. Is at least would be in their head of like, hey, let's bring this guy in, jump start the pass rush, and also be more of a you know, model for our other guys who are in the same vein to like look at him and see like what he does and how he prepares and all this other stuff, and I think, and to help out with that.
I think if you were to bring in Ngakoue, I think that would be a vote of almost like a vote of lack of confidence on Ebiketie, because Yannick, because of his consistency, to me, brings out like eats into that snap or eats into those that playing time, unless like, you know, Tony's saying, you know, Yannick won't be playing outside linebacker. I don't think that. Ebiketie is playing outside linebacker. I think he's playing more DN in what Nielsen's going to do. Now, it'll be interesting to see what he does with Lorenzo Carter. Does Carter play more outside linebacker? So, like, that's one of our biggest, like, question marks at this junction. Now, the last thing, like
– I think Carter does go outside linebacker because I think he's shown to be a better coverage guy than – right. Than maybe we thought. So,
yeah, and I agree, but because he's also a little bit on the lighter side, if I'm not mistaken. So, I'd have to go back and double check. Now, the last little clickbait trade rumor is not really clickbait or trade rumor. I just thought I should throw it out there. This was from a quote from Jason McCourty talking about his, like, 32 teams and 32 things, or like 32 players that he should be watching or should be excited for. And he states for the Falcons, it should be Arthur Smith is what we should be excited for. He said he was in Tennessee when Smith joined the franchise as a defensive quality control coach. Judging by what he did last season with Atlanta's young offensive talent, including Drake London, Algier, and Desmond Ridder, the Falcons fans should be excited about the future of this team. After back-to-back 7-win campaigns in Smith's first 2 seasons as head man, I'm excited to see if he can break through in a wide-open NFC South. I have to completely agree with him. Like,
yeah.
I myself am very excited to what this team could do and what this team has the potential of being, especially in the, you know, in this NFC South, with the idea that, you know, we could transition into talking about, on paper, we have the easiest schedule. Like, on paper, going off of the opponents we had last year, or what our opponents did last year, we have the easiest strength of schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So what were your thoughts on Jason McCourty, or Jason McCourty, what he said?
I totally agree. I mean, if you look at Arthur Smith and you look at what he's had to deal with the last couple of years, with regards to the talent on the roster, and then especially like first year head coach, he had an established quarterback who could distribute the ball, didn't really have a running game, didn't really have a defense, still won 7 games. Then you come to this year, this past season, and your franchise quarterback that you've had for many years now, 14 years, I think it was, 13 years, and you ship him off. You bring in Marcus Mariota. You still don't really have a defense, though it looked better. I honestly think, like, as the season went on, that defense, while it wasn't getting to the quarterback, we were, you know, routinely holding teams to, like, the low 20s, and in some cases of the high teens. And especially we did a lot of really good stuff in halftime adjustments. Teams maybe got out on us a little bit in the first quarter or first half. And then we'd see some progression in the second half, along with the offense doing its thing. And you had a roster last year that was absolutely decimated by salary cap issues.
Right.
You know, one of probably the lowest least talented rosters in the whole NFL. And you still won 7 games, mm-hmm. You know, and probably, and you were this close to probably winning at least 3 or 4 more. So, you know, the potential was there for a 10, 11, maybe even as much as 12 win team. And so we were just this close to a division, even if we didn't have a division that was, 8-9 as the division winner, even if they had won a couple more games, we would still been that close if a couple more games had gone our way.
Right.
So it wasn't like we got, this team overperformed massively this past year. We looked competitive in almost every single game. And it's just, to think that you're going to then add talent to that roster, some of your young guys are going to be another year into the system. You're just adding just talent everywhere on this team. And to think that you shouldn't expect to necessarily, be a little bit better than 7-10 team, you should be, at least a 9-win, 10-win, 11-win team is where I expect them to be. If I get anything more than that, that's gravy on top. Now, does that mean that if we come out and go 6-11 or 7-10 again or 8-9, that I think it's a failure of a season? I personally don't. Again, it all depends on how we look, how things bounce our way.
If it's a 7-win team and we look lost out there
a
lot of the time, then I'm going to have a problem.
Well, if that's the case, then that comes off as more like wasted effort because you had the talent this time, but you like just things, didn't execute well. Which again, that's one thing we can probably say for the most part since Arthur Smith has been here. By and large, this has not been a problem necessarily with execution in a lot of cases. We're one of the least penalized teams in the league since he's been with us.
Right.
We don't kill ourselves a lot with penalties. And so if you can keep that going while adding to the talent and the ability to pull out some of these closer games, then, you know, I think it's an easy thing to look at and say, yeah, I can see this team absolutely winning 10, 11, 12 games.
Yep.
And I'm kind of in that country or kind of in that mold. So,
yeah, no, I'm with you as well there. I'm thinking that like 10 wins, I feel like should be the floor in a lot of aspects, 9-10 wins. I think this year should be Arthur Smith's like first winning season. Like, does that equal, you know, as Nick is saying here, does that equal, you know, NFC South champions? Possibly, very well could. But I do think that you get some, like, serious, like, excitement going on.
Yeah.
Let's see. Big Low Country is in the house. What's going on, Big Low? He got in here and got everybody riled up. chat, which is great. We're going to have Low back on here for too much longer. And
absolutely.
And see what's going
get,
on.
Get somebody on here in case my internet decides to go take a dump
wire
again. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, if we can't get Low on, it's probably because he's going to be signing with the Falcons. I don't know if you've seen like some of his like workout videos, the true number 7 out here. But anyway. So, but I think that's pretty much going to just about wrap it up for us. I know that you're, you know, having to pace your front porch, which I appreciate you may like pushing through that greatly. Hopefully next week, Comcast will get their crap together. But I do think. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I do think, you know, not to fully close it up yet, but I do think that in the past few years, the NFC has been there for the taking, especially last year, even more so this year with like Tom Brady out and Derek Carr in. There's no reason why we can't compete for the division this year and get into the playoffs and maybe have, you know, maybe an early exit, but maybe you win a game. That would be fun. But I think that the arrow is definitely pointing up, and like I said, rookie mini camp coming around the corner has just got me definitely hyped about it.
Absolutely. I hope for a winning season doesn't, you know, be in contention for the division champ. But I don't necessarily need us to win it this year. Do I think we can? Absolutely. Do I think we're going to be in that fight? I fully believe that to be the case. Do I think we need to? No. But I want to see a winning year. I would like to see us get into the playoffs, even if it's, you know, get our feet wet and get knocked out in the first round. Even if that happens, I'd like to get into the playoffs because then that validates. That's just more validation of how things are going, like the process of getting better every second, getting a little bit better. And while it may take a while to get there, maybe this is like the exact opposite of the Dan Quinn effect. The Dan Quinn effect: first year comes in, blows doors off first half of the first year, kind of stumbles in the second half of the year. Then comes back second year and we're in the Super Bowl, and it was kind of all, you know, we should have gone back to the Super Bowl the following year, but then it was kind of all downhill. And once adversity hit, it was almost like he didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
Whereas this is more of a slow and steady wins the race kind of a deal, is the way I'm looking at this. That's why, you know, unless things absolutely just implode, and we're talking winless season here, unless something like that happens, I just don't understand people that are like, you know, well, he's got to get to the playoffs, or he's got to, you know, make a deep run this year, or he's on the hot seat, or whatever. And it's just, I think if we continue to progress, we see a better team this year than we did last year. Cause you know, we're going to come back next offseason and we're going to have more money to spend. We're going to be in a good position cap wise. And can you imagine taking this team, what we currently think of as the roster as it is, and you come back next season and dump another $40, $50, $60 million into this roster on top of that? And it's just awesome. Oh, yeah. I'm so looking forward to it. So
the future is definitely like looking bright in a way that it hasn't looked in a lot of aspects, you know, since 2008, since the, you know, that's what the turning over of a new quarterback does for you is it gives yep. you a, you know, different type of optimism, a different type of excitement. Like I think there towards the end, we may not fully like I understand it, I guess, in a sense, but I think the fan base as a whole may not fully understand or appreciate what, you know, Ryan did for this organization until maybe a few years down the road. But I understand why people weren't super excited about it, like especially there towards the end, because you never really did seem like you could get over the hump. You got the same type of performance from like Matt Ryan was very steady, very
yep.
consistent, you know, and that didn't breed a lot of excitement. Now yeah. you have, you know, the like hope springs eternal. Now you have the new version of a quarterback, one that can move around more, give you that kind of excitement. I mean, you saw him in the Tampa Bay game and the Arizona game, like pull out of sacks and run, you know, so you know he has that ability to him. So, yep. like, there's that kind of excitement. Then you have the excitement of, you know, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts coming back, you know, Drake London. Like, there's some true, like, palpable excitement, and I'll be interested to see how it does end up. Before we start really wrapping it up, Millie had a good question. With the schedule coming out in a couple days, 2 days, who are y'all hoping for as an opener this year? Me, it's a division rival. Let's get a leg up early. So who are you hoping for as far as like a division, like not like an opener? Do you want it to be like, do you want to open at home? Do you want to open on the road? Do you want to open
the Saints? I would love to open on the, like, I would love to open at home. If it's a divisional foe, I want it to be Tampa Bay. I just don't. I don't trust going against the Saints week one. But yeah, like Tampa Bay, honestly, I think is probably going to be the weakest in the division. That's just my personal take. And while I understand, like, let's get the Saints, let's get the Panthers. Panthers, even if their offense is like, you know, a step back from last year somehow or some way, that defense is still really good last year. So that's a really, really good defense. And I would rather be going up against Tampa Bay and let's try to get a week one win under our belts to, again, try to build that momentum. And then we can go into the, you know, take on the Saints, take it on whoever else in the NFC or AFC that we got to take on. But I would like to try to build some momentum coming out of what looks like, you know, barring weirdness with injuries and stuff like that, looks like this is going to be an exciting buildup for, you know, rookie minicamp, OTAs, training camp, preseason, then you get to the regular season. It just feels, I can feel like a momentum, a wave building, and I would like for it to get there and then not run into a brick wall. I would like to get over the hump, get that first week win, so we're over 500, you know, and continue that momentum going.
Right. Yeah. No, I think I'm with you on that. I think I would like to, like, come out, you know, whether it's, you know, any of the division, like South roll, like South rivals would be a nice home opener. Maybe get a win out of the way. Like, yeah, you got, you know, Carolina still has a good defense, but they have a whole new regime. So it may take them a little bit to get moving in the right direction. You know, so I think an easier win would be either against Carolina or Tampa Bay. But I don't know. I think week one, I would like to see. Let's start with like Kenderson's got a, I don't know about on the road, But I don't know. Are we playing Arizona on the road? Because I wouldn't mind opening up with Arizona. Completely new regime who doesn't have, like, their quarterback or nothing like that. Just, like, start out with a win, start out moving in the right direction kind of deal. That's yeah. My thoughts there.
Yeah.
I'm with Antonio. I hope we don't have a London game. I don't think we're going to have one this year.
I thought I read somewhere that we might, but.
Oh, did you?
I can't say for sure.
Yeah.
well, the way they're working with the schedule this year, apparently, like, each schedule is like its own little free agent and can kind of do, team can have multiple Thursday night games now. There's going to be a Black Friday game on Friday.
Yeah, that whole deal, that just, like, you're going to sit here, as much as the players hate Thursday night games, and you're going to sit here and try to talk about player safety, but that's a whole other topic. We could do 20 minutes on that alone. But
what they need to do is they need to add an extra
bye week.
An extra bye week and schedule Thursday night games around the bye weeks.
Either coming off your bye or going on, whatever, And I know, Thursday night games ends up being like a little mini bye. It still ain't a bye. You still have to turn around and get ready, for another game. It's just too close. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us tonight. We have talked all the talked all the things. And Jonathan is a trooper. He finished the show on the porch.
Hey man, fresh air is out here.
There you go. Keep your eye on the channel. We'll have something out on either Friday or Saturday, depending on if YouTube gives me a hassle or not. And as always, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grimm1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan?
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
And we'll be back next Tuesday with another live show. So bring your questions and your comments and your likes and your shares and all that good fun stuff.
And, absolutely.
As always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up. Bam, bam.